Hello, welcome to Leaving in Color, a podcast about uncovering your radiant self after losing your faith. I am your host, Christina Elmer. I'm so delighted you found us. Hello, everyone. We have made it. We survived the dredges of January and February, and thank God we made it to March. We are in the season of rebirth and growth, revitalization. Everything's starting to bloom again, and the world is green and just amazing and glorious again. Well, here we are, part two of Theron's story, returning home to yourself. I am very excited for this week's episode and just a content warning before you continue on with this episode. If you have kids in the car or are sensitive to just a sensitive soul, just a content warning for this episode. You might want to pause on this episode and wait for upcoming episodes. Speaking of which, we are going to take a small hiatus here at Leaving in Color. Don't worry, we will be back at some point in the near future, but please keep an eye out on our socials, our only social media account on Instagram, leavingincolor.pod, for any further updates on when we might be back. But without further ado, here is part two of Theron's episode. I hope you enjoy, and we will see you very, very soon. So how was your mission experience overall? You mentioned you had baptisms, which, I mean, that's the marker for any person serving a mission for the Mormon Church. Is like, you know, there's that scripture that says, like, if you bring but one soul unto me, you know, yours is the kingdom of God. But like, what was your mission?
It was great. Like, we had a...
How successful were you, Elder Olivar?
So the key is stars. So within your mission, you'd have to get stars, right? So for reference, I'm showing her my journal. So these are all the stars.
Yeah, so he's showing me his mission journal.
And I had 110 baptisms. Yeah, so they're all labeled. It's like whether gold stars are for when I found them, taught them, and baptized them. And I got to do the baptizing. Okay. Like, and so silver stars are if I came in within the discussions and taught them a little bit, but they still wanted me to be the baptizing one. So red stars are just people that I taught, but somebody else baptized.
Interesting. I didn't know that that was a... My ex-husband never mentioned anything like that on his mission. Was it... Do you think that that was just specific to the Argentina Buenos Aires mission, or...
Yeah, it's not a common thing. I learned from my trainer.
Okay.
Because he started it. So you get the stickers from like the dollar store, and you pay like 1 peso for like 100 stars. Okay. And that's how I got the key. And I'm like, okay, like, let me just put these down for the names that I, so I wouldn't forget them. And like, so I got track of like the districts that I was in, their names, the dates, and all that stuff. So I would keep track. It didn't matter on the mission. Okay. But yeah, it was just for my reference.
Very cool.
It was an awful, amazing time out on the mission. Just because, like, being away from my family for so long, because originally we're tight-knit, and all of a sudden now I can't talk to them, you know? Like, and I didn't understand why, and I didn't understand I could only speak to them for, you know, half an hour. And I've got 4 siblings, my parents, my grandparents, they'd all go to the house and hope to speak with me. And I was just like, oh, hi, guys. Like, how are you guys? You have to make it short. And then just say like, hey, give me your number, I'll call you. And I'd have to say no. Like, I can't talk to you because I have to free up the line for my companion who's going to call. And sometimes you're living with 4 dudes in a house, which is another story to go along with. But yeah, it's great because you learn how to approach people. You learn how to have that human aspect and that human contact. and spark conversation about religion. That's not an easy thing to open up conversations these days.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just, it teaches you a lot to get outside the box. It teaches you a lot of life skills. Like, I'm an excellent salesman. If I went into sales, it would have been amazing. But I went the accounting route.
Yeah.
But if I could do it again, I wouldn't. But I'm glad I did, as contradicting as that is.
No, I don't think it's contradicting at all.
You know, because from 19 to 21, you're answering to somebody and you're giving up 2 years of your life. You're putting your education on pause.
Yeah.
To go out and recruit, which it is recruiting.
It is recruiting.
It is recruiting. One of the pivotal moments within the mission was so the ceremony we're speaking about the coming of age of women and when they become women.
Mm-hmm.
I only have one sister, so I've got three brothers, one sister. She became a woman while I was out on the mission. So she was like 14.
Okay.
And so I was just like, okay, now I have to go home. And so I had to have a discussion with my mission president. And I was just like, hey, you know, like, this is going on. I have to go home. Because my dad was on the tribal council. So he was one of the council members.
Okay.
And my mom was like, hey, this happened. I'll see you at the house. Like, you're coming home. And so I had a discussion with the mission president. First, he tried coming at me to say sins of the fathers and all that stuff. And I said, no, this isn't religious. This is ceremonial. And we got to talking and he's like, he had my best friend, the friend that I studied during high school, and he was Mormon. And I kind of went in with him. And then he's the one that actually baptized me. But they got him to call me because he was serving a mission in New York. Okay. So my buddy called me to try and to talk me off a cliff because I was ready to get on a plane. I'm like, my parents were going to pay for it just to get me home.
Yeah.
And yeah, I stayed and I missed my sister's ceremony.
What? That's so heartbreaking. Was there any resentment from your family when you got home? Because that's a big thing. Your only sister, you know, you're serving a mission and you're serving a church that they view as a cult.
Yes, but they were kind enough. They were gracious enough not to throw it in my face or anything like that. It was more me. Like, I was like, my sister's my best friend.
Yeah. You wanted to go home. You want to support her and be there for it. And they were manipulating you into staying. They used actual manipulation to keep you from going home to be with your family, which is just completely mind-boggling. As you and I both know, that the Mormon Church claims to be very family-oriented. Like, they have the motto, family first, families can be together forever. Families are forever, right?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, Darren.
Which is what I guess the regret comes from for the church, is because they said, if you break this pact, more or less it's going to affect the viewpoint of my family. So if they want to be with me forever, and if I want to get sealed to them, what impression am I making on them by just leaving, you know, the missionary work? And I was just like, you're right. So I guess this is, and he would tell me this, my mission president, he told me, like, this is just an instant compared to eternity. And I'm like, you know what? You're right. You know, if I want to be with my family forever, cool. Now that I actually believe in everything, now looking back, I did it. I wasn't in it for the right reason. I just, after a while, you repeat it for so many times that you buy in. Now I'm vested. Yeah. And so I listened and I stayed. I told my family I was staying. And even to this day, my sister will take jabs at me and be like, oh yeah, you should have been at my, like, we call it dance. And it's a social event. It's the social event of the year, like, of every girl's life. And I missed it. So, and I'm just like, man, I think I wish I saw it.
Yeah. And how far into your mission was this?
Like a year and a I was district leader, so it was like a year into my mission.
Okay.
And, you know, the effects of it really had gotten to me just because it was like, crap, I missed this pivotal moment in my sister's life just to stay out here and work on me. You know, it's like, who the hell am I? Who am I to miss all this stuff? And by then I'd met Tucker, and Tucker and I became friends because we just talked trash. We talked trash about nonsense. We just go on walks. We were in a pretty much in a dying, we call them dying areas where nobody would talk, speak to us.
Okay.
But yeah, we just would just block off our days, say we have appointments and just hang out.
I love that.
So it was great.
Were you guys ever companions? Were you guys ever companions? Or
we were never companions. We went on splits one time, and splits is just when you trade partners within your district.
Trade companions, yeah.
And yeah, so we did splits one time, and then we just clicked. And I was just like, yeah, hey, you're cool. And he's, and so we just talked about back home. You know, I found out where he was from, and it was just chill. He was a good break. And I use him as my therapist sometimes. I sit there and on our walks, I just talk to him. But yeah, you picked a good one. Yeah, I love that kid.
Thank you. I like to think so. Yeah. I like to think so. But yeah, I'm glad he's shared some fond memories of his time on his mission with you. I think, if nothing at all, like the people that you meet during those 2 years, you know, sometimes they're there for a moment, and other times, like, you know, you have people that are in your life forever and they just kind of pop up. And
which is what it is. It's because the weird thing about the mission is you never really get to know each other because you're under a whole facade. You're elder,
yeah,
who your last name,
yeah,
and you're a representative of Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And so you never really get to open up. And mm-hmm. I feel like he and I, we just bonded. We just shot the shit and we just opened up, and that was it. To this day, we still keep in touch. I mean, yeah. And we spent maybe the equivalent of 3-4 days together.
Okay.
Over the span of 2 years.
Yeah.
But whenever we saw each other, that was just it. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, you're my brother.
Yeah, I love that.
So I guess we connected under trauma. Who knows?
Yeah, there is something to be said about that for sure. You know, yeah, it's difficult. I can't imagine serving a mission and everything that you go through, and finding someone that's like almost feels like home. That's just like, okay, mm-hmm. This is, like you said, this is my brother. Or for me, it would be like, this is my sister or brother. And, you know, you just hit it off. And, you know, if we want to put it in Mormon terms, it's like somebody that you knew in a past life, or, you know, in the pre-existence, like, you know, it's probably like,
yeah, we fought together.
Yes. Did you ever watch the crazy, it's not crazy, I shouldn't say it's crazy because I was obsessed with it, the movie Saturday's Warrior? It came out in the 70s. Tucker hasn't seen it either, and I was obsessed with it. You may be able to find it on YouTube, but like, it's a Mormon musical that essentially like tells the story about a certain family.
Uh-huh.
And how this family knew everybody in the pre-existence, and how they chose to come to this specific family at a specific time. Like, it shows them choosing their birth order.
Oh.
And so since leaving Mormonism and doing a lot of study and reading into all the things that were kind of illegal in Mormonism, you know, looking into like past lives and things like that, I know that souls have met, you know, the people that we meet in this lifetime, we've known in some fashion in a former life, in a past life. And Mormonism does have, you know, I think that's one thing that I did enjoy about it. It was like, you knew somebody before you came in this time in your life, you know, in this form. And so I told Tucker, it's like, I feel like I know you from earlier. And I wanted to sing songs from Saturday's Warrior. And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And again, you don't even know what I'm talking about either. But I grew up on that movie. It was like the movie that I always picked to watch. And I just loved it because there was a little bit of romance. And, you know, a girl doesn't want to like send a boy off on a mission and wait for him and all the goofy things. It's so goofy just talking about it. I'm like, oh, this is cringy.
Well, hopefully they wait for him. I mean, that's...
Spoiler alert. She doesn't wait for the boy that she sends off on a mission. She falls in love with the guy that he converts on the mission. So anyway, it's kind of funny.
Oh my gosh.
If Tucker and I ever come visit you, I'm going to bring a copy of it. We're going to sit and I'm going to educate you guys on Saturday's Warrior.
I think I'll need wine. I will bring wine.
Yes, I'll need a lot of alcohol to make it extra entertaining because it's bizarre for sure. So, the mission. Huh. Well, I'm glad that you met Tucker and that you guys were able to have a little brotherhood on that otherwise difficult experience. I mean, like you said, there's a lot that someone can learn on a mission. You already obviously went in with an amazing work ethic. Like you were like, okay, this is, you know, how do I keep myself busy? Which it's sad that you felt like you had to keep busy in order to mask your true self.
Well, because like the end goal still, like throughout the 2 years is like, fix this. And the weird thing, I mean, I will say like Argentina also one of the gayest countries there is, and not as a diss, so nobody please come for me.
No,
I mean,
no, we love the gays. It's fine.
We love the gays. Like, if you see people, like everybody would just give each other kisses on the cheeks. And then if you really got to know with somebody, like they'd kiss you on the mouth, whether they be men would kiss you on the mouth.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is weird. Like at first I'm like, what is this? But within missionaries, we did it as jokes, you know, with whoever we saw, we're like, oh
yeah.
And just kiss each other on the mouth. And I'm there and I'm like, I'm trying to fix and stop this. So I don't do this. What's going on? You know?
Right. Yeah.
I still have that thing in the back of my mind and I'm just like, what am I doing? Was I really sent here for a reason? Which I should have taken as a sign, like, hey, it's okay. Other people do it.
Yeah, we're so young. Like, you know, I had
signs
that I was like, I probably shouldn't do this, like marry the person that I did marry. You know, there was like warning signals, but it's like, well, you know, I prayed about it and God said that I should do it. I felt fine. I didn't feel anything negative. So it's probably fine. It's just, you know, the mental gymnastics
that
the signs of the spirit. If it's not anything negative, you know, doubt your doubts before you doubt your faith kind of thing.
And you probably ask like, should I get married? And they're like, yes. And you're like, oh yeah, I should get married. But not to him.
I know that missions are good for people. I have a friend who's kind of, she's like, physically in but mentally out. The acronym is PIMO. It's the weirdest thing ever.
PIMO?
PIMO, P-I-M-O.
Oh,
physically in, mentally out. Whoa. Yeah. In the church. Yeah. There's all sorts of acronyms. I mean, you know, the church loves acronyms, you know, and I mean, what organization doesn't love acronyms? I remember when I spent a year in education, it was like all these acronyms. I'm like, I don't know what the fuck half of these mean.
SSA. I hate that.
We can talk about that. SSA. You know, let's talk about that. Since we're on it, let's go ahead and talk about the acronym SSA.
Same sex attraction. Oh my God. Yeah, the church says SSA. And so you have to be like, I have SSA. Like, you have a disease.
Did you go to any of those groups?
I did not.
You didn't? Okay. Was it for fear of like being found out?
Oh yeah. So yeah. Because coming from like an all Mormon town at the time, an all Mormon, like majority Mormon college.
Okay.
Eastern Arizona. I mean, it's the BYU of the South is what they call themselves.
Yeah.
And I had a calling. I was active in my church. I was like priesthood quorum. I forgot what it was. Something. But teacher, I think. And I just left. One day I was just like, came up to Phoenix, met my bartender, made my friends. I came up like 3 weekends before I decided, hey, this is where I want to be.
This is where I belong. These are my people. Yeah.
Right. And it's almost like I can be me, even though I don't know who that is. I can relax and I don't have to create a facade just to impress anybody else.
Yeah.
It was great.
Eastern Arizona, my dad's family is from that area. Like my great grandmother was good friends with Spencer W. Kimball.
He actually cussed. That was my excuse. I would cuss every now and then.
Yeah.
And then I'd be like, oh, convert. And Spencer W. would cuss too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And he was a prophet of the Lord.
I do not know that.
Yeah, he would say ass all the time.
Well, I also had a friend when we were living upstate New York who was a convert to the church. And she said, well, I can say hell or damn because it's in the Bible. I'm like, that makes sense. Good for you, sister. I'm not point, because
you're quoting scripture.
And they talk. Yeah. Ass is in there, too. Why not? Yeah. So as to say, same sex attracted. That word is so dirty to me. Like I cringe now, even out being outside of the church. Like I cringed in the church, obviously, because. Yeah, I don't that term. It's like, why can't we say gay?
Right.
Why can't we use the word gay? You know,
right. I think it just normalizes the whole thing and that makes it too normal.
Yeah.
Like the normalcy of having SSA.
Yeah.
Is being that you are gay.
Yeah.
And that's the accepting part is that you, hey, I'm gay.
Yeah.
You know, like I always joke and say like, I'm like my partner is the gay one and I'm just here. He happens to be male. Yeah. I'm not gay. Yeah. So. But it's just like, it turns it into a, like a bad word. And that, and even to this day, like, I don't say like, oh yeah, I'm fair. I'm gay. Like, I just say I have a partner.
Yeah.
And then Andres shows up and I'm like, oh, this is my partner.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it's just 1 + 1 = 2. And that's it. Am I different? No.
No.
Yeah.
I'm still a human
But
being.
One of my friends, he actually comes from Utah. So he not turned me on to. But he enlightened me and disclosed that there are groups up in Salt Lake City for preemies and ex-missionaries married, and they would just be cuddle parties.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you have your garments on, you can cuddle.
Uh-huh.
What?
Yep.
And they would just like cuddle. And
yeah, I have confirmation that those happen. Like I know that they do.
I was shook it.
Yes, I can imagine so.
Even on the other side, I was out one night and then we met this guy and he was great. He was funny. He was hilarious. He's like, hey, I live nearby. Come over for like a follow-up drink. And I was like, okay, cool. So we went to the house to where the guy had a fetish. And then I realized what it was. I'm like, okay, Lord. We got to get out of here. And one of his things is he is an ex-missionary. He's like, I even have a pair of G's in case people want to see them because they get curious about it. And the amount of ex-mos who want to see me in them, you'd be surprised. And I'm like, if I see G's, if I get to know somebody and I see garments, I'm going to be like, I am being set up.
Right.
The mafia is going to kick down the door and I'm gone.
Yeah. Like the Mormon mafia is going to bust through these doors and they are going to handcuff you and take you away in a back van. Like, right?
Right.
It's so interesting that it keeps the garments.
Like
garments are not sexy.
They are not. They invite all kinds of heat.
That's a whole other episode right there. But
in itself, I'm sure for ladies, it's the same. You have like three choices.
Yeah, I think they've gotten better. Like I remember it was within 10 years ago, they sent out an email to members of the church asking for feedback, particularly women, on garment styles. And I remember filling it out because I was like, this is bullshit. And I mean, I was one of those women that like got the smallest size possible so that I could like, you know, wear a slightly longer shirt that would just cover it just enough, you know,
just enough.
And then I could wear a skirt that kind of like hit slightly above the knee because I would get petites instead of my, you know, just regular. Because sometimes they would just hang. My ex-husband would be like, your skirt is too short. I'm like, excuse me.
It covers my G's.
Yeah. So, and I'm like, okay, whatever. It's, no, just stop policing my body. Anyway, but yeah, garments. That's so interesting that he kept them because ex-Mormon, like other ex-Mormon gays that he would meet would want to see him in that. That's kinky.
Yeah. Even, he said even gentlemen who weren't affiliated with the church loved the idea of garments. I don't know if it like fetishizes the you're first.
It kind of does in a way. I mean, I can, I'm kind of here for it. I mean, whatever floats your boat, right? Everybody has a flavor. Everybody finds their flavor, whatever works for them, right? That's just really fascinating.
Right.
There are people all over TikTok
that really is.
Show the garments. It's out there. People can find the information out there. Like the church at one point even had on their website, you could go and they had pictures of them. So I had friends that were curious. Like, oh, what does it look like?
Oh.
Yeah, because they were trying to be less secretive about it, right? Which I appreciate.
Yeah.
But they are the least sexiest things ever.
They are not attractive. One time I was like at a gym and I was changing. I got out of the shower and then this guy got out of the shower too. And then I saw him put on his jeans. And first of all, I was taken aback because I'm no longer in the church at this point, right? And I looked at him, I'm like, what are you doing? You're showing these garments in public, you know? And I remember I looked around, read the room, and I saw some guy look at him like, what kind of underwear are those? Like, those
aren't boxer briefs. You can't get those at Costco. Like, those are,
yeah. And I remember like looking like, what are you doing? You're showing everybody else. Even though I wasn't even affiliated with the church, that's how ingrained it was. Yeah. Like, you don't show that stuff.
The same.
So, yeah. So the guy, he's like, do you want to see them? And I'm like, oh, yeah. So I saw them and I didn't realize that wondered if I wanted to see him in them. And I'm like, no, I'm going to go home. Thank you. My partner's at home.
And it does nothing for any of the parts that are fun on a human body. It doesn't do anything for them.
It does
nothing.
Nothing. Oh, it's horrible.
Goodness. It's horrible. Oh, that is. That's. That's wild. That is very rowdy. I love it. That would have been wild. But yeah. Okay. So you finished a 2-year mission. You come home.
I go back to school. Yeah. So okay. I go back to school. I go back to school that's predominantly Mormon. So they made me the athletic director for the institute.
Okay.
So that was my calling. And then I started dating, almost got married.
Oh.
And it would have been picture perfect, right? Mm-hmm. And then it got to the point where I'm like, hey, well, internally, of course, my monologue's going off. And I'm like, would I love her the way she deserves it? Because I genuinely love her still as a person. And there we go. We revert back to preschool or junior high where I'm like, I like these people. I want them to be my friends.
Yeah.
But I'm too scared to show them who I really am.
Yeah.
So you've got all these layers to protect yourself. And then with her, it was just like a matter of that's not fair because I would love her for having my children, not for being my partner.
Yeah.
It'd be fair to, in a sense, to say, you want a husband and kids? I can give you that. But it's transactional.
Yeah.
Because I still got this going on. So finally, I did a year. I moved in with my buddies who all went on missions. And within that year of school, nothing had changed. So then I was feeling defeated. I was like, I went on the mission. I sacrificed 2 years. I sacrificed, you know, everything with my home life, my family. For what? So I went through a depression phase. And then finally, I was just like, you know what? If you're depressed, you lost on everything, you know, go explore. So I decided, and this is when the internet was new. So I MapQuest gay bars in Phoenix, Arizona, because that's the nearest big city, right? Because there was nothing coming up around my vicinity. And so I printed out the directions how to get to these gay bars. And the funny thing is, I took time off of school. I took a weekend off, came to Phoenix, rented a hotel room by myself, and then went to this gay bar that's no longer there, Amsterdam. And the first thing I walked in, and it was empty. It was at 7 p.m. I didn't realize that it didn't open until 9 p.m. I walk in, and I'm like, oh, there's nobody here. So there aren't any gay people, right? So I'm like, okay, I need people because I need a social, like a friend group to function.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember I sat at the bar and they just put the bar stools down and I sat at the bar. And so the bartender comes over to me and he's like, hey, what are you having? And I looked at him and I was just like, I don't know. All I do know is I don't like beer. And he's like, okay. He's like, well, you know, we're not open, right? And I was like, no. What time do you open? And he's like, oh, 9, but it'll be fun. And then he asked me where I was from. So then I found out that he was from Salt Lake and his name was Josh and he was my first bartender. And he's just like, and back in the day, it's like there was RULDS, right? That slogan.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And he's like, are you LDS? And I was like, I'm an RM. And he's like, oh, me too. I'm from Salt Lake. And I'm thinking, how can he bartend at a gay bar? Like, and so he gave me a drink and then he's just like, yeah, he's like, I'm one too. And I was like, huh, what? So we had a whole conversation of like coming out, how hard it is, the impact that it had on family, how you pretty much just have to bunker down in a city to create that friend group to replace your family, right?
Yeah.
And your friends.
Your chosen family. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Your chosen family. And he's like, once people find out, it's going to run rampant. And I didn't know what that meant until it happened.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay. So I just stayed there. I'm very social. So I made friends, talked to people. I had two, what were they? Midori Sours.
Midori? I've never had one. I know that was Britney Spears' like drink of choice. Was that an influence? Like, are you a Britney fan? Was that an influencing factor?
See, I am, but I didn't know what that was. I didn't know what that was. So he's like, oh, you'll like this because you don't like beer, right? And I'm like, no, I don't like the smell of it. I don't know what beer is. And so I had a couple of Midori Sours. And then, but I talked to people, I made some friends, got invited out the next weekend, and evolved from there. Made the best friends to where I was ready to leave school, ready to leave that life, and ready to leave it behind me. And I did. And the second I did and people found out, it was like, okay, the lights off. Everybody said their piece amongst each other. They gossiped about it because
they don't know how to have this difficult conversation, like to have the empathy to be like, hey, so what's going on with you? Like, how can I support you? I've heard this thing. And instead they just like a bunch of pecking hens.
Yeah. They spoke amongst themselves and just shut me off. And all of a sudden my phone stopped ringing and I went through my little depressed phase, but I got a second job just to keep me busy. And I just never looked back. And it's not until actually recently that my old roommate came around and was like, hey, I just wanted to say I'm sorry. And I'm like, but what? By this time, I'm numb, right? Like, yeah. I got teary-eyed when I was talking about my sister. But like, I was like, for what? And I was like, you have a family, you're married, you're doing all this. We were best friends back in the day in college. And when he stopped talking to me, when he stopped all communication and everything, I was hurt at the time. And then I found out who my real friends were.
Yeah.
I had met my partner, built my life up from nothing. It was legit the dark ages. Just because my family didn't know how to deal with it.
Had you come out to them as well?
I did. So it was all in one. And I told my parents. And my friends found out because I was actually living with a buddy because we were living in his older brother's house and he got married. So we lived in that house. And one weekend, my buddy comes home and he's like, hey, the neighbors said there was a Honda Civic parked in the front yard all weekend. And that's my current partner's old car. And I was like, oh, yeah, I had a buddy over. And I was like, because I don't want to be home alone. And he's like, oh. But they said they've seen that car here before. And I'm like, oh, like, yeah. So totally insinuating. And then finally, I was just like, what are you asking? They said he looked gay. And I'm like, oh. I was like, how do you tell? I was like,
What does that mean?
So apparently we lived in a predominantly Mormon community to where they were watching the house and I was home. So they saw my now partner walk into the house and they're like, oh yeah, some gay guy was going to into the house and they stayed all weekend. So then I was like, you know what? You caught me. Yes. So I told him, luckily my brother lived nearby, like within 20 minutes and we weren't really talking, but I was like, I called him up and I'm like, hey, I got to move and I got to move today. I'm getting kicked out of the house. And he's just like, okay, no questions asked, pulled up. And like, I'm 5'9" and a half and 210 pounds. And my brothers are like, I'm the shortest of my family. So they're 6'1", 6'2", 6'3". Wow. And so he comes over, he's just maintaining the peace, just helping me move out of my little room. And he asked, he's like, what happened? So I told him and I'm like, yeah, it's like, I'm all distraught at the moment because everything's a big deal back then when you're young. And I was like, yeah, I was like, he said this. And I'm like, well, you know, I don't like girls, right? And he's just like, yeah, I've known since you're a kid. And I'm like, well, you could have freaking told me. I'm like, you would have saved me some time.
Yeah.
And he's just like, nah, he's like, it's for you to figure out. And he just was just super accepting. He's like, he's a former police officer. So he's very matter of fact and like motions are run off his sleeve. So he told me that it was okay. I could stay with him for a little bit till I got on my feet. And yeah, so I just picked up from them because when I was up here, I tried to juggle between the lines of between Mormonism and the lifestyle, right? And it wasn't until then that I figured out, like, hey, why not just go full throttle? And after that, it spread out. My friends stopped talking to me. They started talking about
you, yeah.
So I just got sad and everything, every negative news was bad news. Until I finally cut them off. And then once I cut them off and I said, hey, you know what? You guys can talk your shit. I'll be over here living my best life. And I did. I joined the sports group. I did all this stuff. And I just cut everybody off from the church from like Facebook. I unfriended people. Back then it was MySpace. Like that's how old I am.
Yeah, well, I used MySpace too. Yeah. Yes. I don't remember my news, but yeah. I totally had the same thing.
Yeah, so I deleted everybody, and I was just like, okay, in my mind, if they add me, then they want to be my friend.
Yeah.
And so I waited, and nobody really added me. Until...
Yeah, did you bump into anybody at some point? Like, did you run into anybody from your former life while you were going through this life transition?
In the mall one time, but that was easy to avoid just because I went to the other side. And I was...
Okay, so you didn't have like a... face-to-face interaction with them.
I just chose not to just because I was like, what I'm going to say probably won't be as articulate as, because I didn't have the words still. I didn't have the words like to figure out who I was. Like, I really don't know what I'm doing, but I know that this is okay. And this is who I am. And they kept saying like, well, you know, one of the things that my old roommate said was that I was lying, that I lied to him about who I was. And I told him, I'm like, well, yeah, I was like, but this is me now. Like, I'm finally not lying to you anymore of who I am or who I like. That's the only thing I've lied to you about. Everything else has just been me. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you've seen me shower. And I looked and I'm like, dude, you've seen me shower.
Yeah. So what does that mean? What does that have to do with anything?
Right. We were five guys living in this house with one bathroom. So there'll be somebody on the john, somebody brushing their teeth, and somebody in the shower. Like, that's just, that was just a normal rotation. Boys are disgusting, by the way.
Yeah, well,
and that's what I said.
I have two of my own.
I was like, I don't see you guys as that. I was like, I see you guys as my brother.
Yeah.
I don't have those kinds of feelings for you guys. Like, you guys look at it as, like, Theron's like this. He's seen me naked. And it's like, everything is just skewed to where it turned dirty. And I'm like, yeah. Wow, those were funny times. Those weren't serious. And that's hard to translate or to say to straights, because according to them, we are just perverts and all we want to do is talk to them and talk, like, get them in bed. And I'm like, no, we can have friendships. Like, you're my friend. You were my brother.
Yeah.
Until you chose not to be.
Yeah. It's unfortunate, but also not surprising that they chose to weaponize something that's... Yeah. Like, they immediately sexualize something. Like, why do you have to take it to that point? You know? Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to look at it from a secular point of view of, like, men in a locker room, you shower together.
Right.
You know?
Chances are.
That's just so interesting and unfortunate. I wonder what the conversation would have been like, that person at the mall, if you had, like, spoken to them. It's just, I'm just going based upon my own experience with people that I've run into. Like, I had to go to sacrament meeting a couple of months ago. My ex is still in, and so my 10-year-old did the primary program, which is, like, for listeners, a once a year, it's like the summary of all the things that they learn in junior Sunday school, all the songs, you know, they have little mm-hmm. speeches that they give. And so my 10-year-old was in it, and he asked me to be there, so I went. And there are people that live in the neighborhood that I live in that I could run into at any point. They know where I live. And one lady came up to me. She's right. Like, oh, I haven't seen you in forever. You know, are you still living where you're living? I'm like, yeah, I am. I was like, she's like, oh, that's awesome. You know, let's get together. So I'm just, like, very superficial. And, you know, I can play the game too. I'm not a dummy. You know, I'm.
Yeah.
Because it could go both ways. Right. If I want to see these people, but it feels, again, you leave this community, this group of people that are so initially welcoming, but then, you know, there's just, like, the undertone of an ulterior motive. Like, they only want you if you're here, or they only want you yeah. if they can convert you. And I'm not saying that goes for all members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. There are some really decent people in the church. I have loved ones who are still in, and they're the greatest humans I've ever known. But it's difficult, because you, being a social person, you want to be able to have connections and have people in your life. You want to have a community, and then you're immediately ostracized. Mm-hmm. So I can imagine why you did not intentionally, you know, kind of, thank goodness malls are big, you're able to avoid them. But, you know, being in a situation where you can't avoid them, it's just the conversations are very, very superficial. But, you know, I can be super superficial and petty too, you know? I can play that game.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that's what it comes to. Is like, I hate to say fake, but I mean, it's just, like, casual. Like, oh my God, yeah, let's get together.
Let's get together.
And leave yeah. it at that, and we never see each other again.
Yeah.
Until we see each other.
Not that those interactions are ideal. I don't care for those anymore. Like, I would rather just be straightforward and intentional, and, like, not say things that I don't actually mean. Like, I wish, you know, right. It's nice to see you today. Hope everything is well. I don't need the, oh, let's get together, or I don't need that, you know?
Yeah. In worst case scenario, the missionaries are there, and it's like,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's like, no, actually, I'll pass, but thank you. Yeah. So moving on, you've moved to Phoenix at this point, you've built a new community. You met your current partner there in Phoenix. You're building this new life. We talked about this outside of the podcast, but you did mention your advocacy work. I'm going to call it that because that's what it is to me. With ALL, do you want to tell me what ALL yeah. is?
A beautiful organization. So one thing that I wish I had when I first came out here, because pivotal moments for people once they move away from the hive, and move to cities that they're unfamiliar with just to start a new life and start over, is that you have to decide if you're going to live the lifestyle or, unfortunately, or if you're going to off yourself. Pretty much like, mm-hmm. why am I going to go to hell? Is it because I'm going to live a gay lifestyle, live as a gay person, and accept who I am? Or am I going to go there in the fast route and just send myself there? So all Arizona, it's like Arizona LGBTQ, LDS. What we do is we just meet up. It's like family home evening and is a way to get people in contact because there is an organization in here in Phoenix, which is 1 in 10. So it's a youth organization that helps youth, you know, homeless youth and everything on that, on the streets, because 1 in 10 kids is gay, statistically, what they say. But all is just amazing. There's no bad thing I can say about them, but they help youth because, like, people we have from Utah that come down, they don't have any resources, they don't have family, they don't have friends, and so they turn into drugs, alcohol, because now they've just pretty much given up on life.
Yeah.
We have kids who come down from Salt Lake that just turn into prostitution because now it's just they don't have the means to make ends meet and they're shunned from people back home.
Yeah.
And this isn't for everybody. It's not everybody comes down and now they're hookers or drug addicts. It's just a communal place that says, hey, it's safe. Mm-hmm. So we have parents who are still active in the church, but they have one set of parents have two gay sons who are both returned missionaries and they're both temple worthy. The parents are temple worthy. They just don't believe that their sons are evil, quote unquote. So they're out there fighting the good fight. They put themselves in the awkward situations to where they can speak about it. We have other parents who have, you know, a single child who is gay and they're the Mama Dragons. They legit have a Facebook group called the Mama Dragons.
Yeah.
And they've started that and they advocate and they say, hey, don't you dare talk crap about my kids. Don't you dare make my child feel uncomfortable. And it's amazing. The amount of resources that they have is amazing. And to be involved in a group with that, we actually do have conferences where people come down and speak on certain issues revolving around juggling LDS and LGBTQ lifestyle.
Okay.
Just to expand that knowledge.
Are those conversations different than the typical, like, the normal, like, suppress? I'm assuming that it's more welcoming, like, come as you are.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they legit come as you are. The phrase I'll walk with you is legit what they mean. They're like, if you don't have a mom to stand with you at your wedding day, I'll be your mom.
They're beautiful.
Just amazing.
Yeah,
like we showed up to Pride one year and it was like free hugs, like hey, I'm a father of a gay child, I'm your father, give me a hug. They are the advocates. So the group, I mean, so there are members like me. We just come as normal ex-Mos and ex-Mormons. And that's essentially our coming out, is if we're active or not. It's like, I'm ex. They don't pressure me to come back to church. If I want to, I know I can go with them and just say, hey, I'm going to go with you to sacrament meeting. Yeah. Is that okay? Obviously, we know the scriptures. We know enough to where we can just walk into sacrament meeting and be like, oh, I'm visiting.
Yeah.
And that'll be that. It's not an advocacy group. It's a support group.
Support group.
It's like family home evening. It's a safe space. If you have issues, you can bring it up. They have resources. They can point you in the right direction, whatever you need. But it's pretty amazing. ALL.com. Just look it up. There's a Facebook group. Granted, it is private because we do have
people. Obviously, who there's aren't like safety stuff
out
yeah.
yet. Yeah, so we protect everybody in there in the groups and just show what people post that may be public. Yeah. And it's like pretty much like comment on this if you're okay with it being seen. So, but we give that disclaimer.
Yeah, there's a lot of agency.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do feel like there's a little bit of, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but there is some advocacy just like advocating for inclusivity and love, right?
Yeah.
That's beautiful. I'm glad that you're a part of that and giving the space, as you were telling about, you know, youth that identify as LGBTQ plus the spectrum and being a member of the LDS Church, there's a conflict within that. And in having a group, I'm thinking about the Lost Boys that come from the FLDS, which is like the fundamentalist LDS, because there's been a lot of documentaries put out about that group and the boys that are kicked out because they're competition for the older men and how there's not supports in place. And I'm grateful that there are organizations like All that, you know, have supports in place for these teens and these young people that are left without a community, a home, a family. Being a mother myself, I can't imagine hating my child in that way. You know, just saying that you are not good enough because I believe a higher power is telling me that what you're doing is wrong. You know, like if we want to go back to the belief in with the Apache people that you are from your mother, you are the tribe of your mother, and being so close in that way and being a mother and saying, no, thank you. You know, I can't love you like that. The mother wound in general, and regardless of who you are, is a difficult wound to heal. But to then like ostracize your child because of a belief system is devastating.
Right. A taught system that is skewed.
It's skewed. I mean, and, you know, we're taught in Mormonism that, you know, families are forever. And yet, you know, we keep people out of coming into the temple to see people get married. You know, I think about my kids, my oldest, if he ever decides to get, my parents weren't there when I was sealed to my ex-husband. And I have, like I said, I have friends that are in, and, you know, a dear friend of mine whose daughter is out, and but just the love that she has, you know, she could never abandon her child. And
yeah, so I can imagine. I mean, being the child thereof, yes, it's tough, but I mean, I can imagine being the mother.
Yeah.
It's like you gave life to this child.
Yeah.
And I mean, luckily enough, it's like I sit and talk to my mom now. Like I make my confessions to my mother now. We have a beautiful relationship. Like she's my walking diary. And, you know, she even apologized and she's like, said she's sorry for the dark ages, for when we weren't on top, on speaking terms, but it's just for that status within religion. And she didn't understand the steps I took, you know, to kind of rectify everything. So once I explained everything, she looked at me and she's like, you know, she'd ask, I wish you told me. And I'm like, I couldn't. Yeah. And it was that aha moment of like, yeah, transparency is key, because I did have that outlet, but I didn't know how to say it. And in a way, like being a male, like you don't want to disappoint your family. You don't want to make people feel sorry for you, even in the least. Like, luckily enough, like I was good enough in sports. I was smart. I was social. I was student body vice president in high school. I was FFA president. I did all these extracurricular things just because I was overcompensating.
Yeah.
You know, like I had girlfriends. It's like I was almost a dad at 16. It was It was just everything just to fix it. And I did everything but have an honest conversation.
Yeah. But we're not taught that, you know? I think, I wonder if it's just like, I love my parents, but I wonder if it's just our generation of parents. It's just, they weren't taught to have conversations. A lot of families weren't. I know that mine, like, we still don't have conversations about tough things. And so it wasn't something that we talked openly about. You know, my parents also divorced when I was 13. And so just, you know, there weren't things that I was able to talk openly about, or, you know, come to my parents from a space of curiosity, because everything just felt fearful. And I don't know if it was just because of the Mormon upbringing or even a religious upbringing in general. If you were raised religious, like being fearful of being honest, because if it wasn't falling in line of, you know, the belief system, you know, and your parents who are there to teach you it's kind of like, you know, you don't want to disappoint them. You don't want to offend them.
Right. Which is, now, if I could go back time and just be like, there, shut up, have a conversation with your mom, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
If I could go back and say that to my younger self, it would be pretty amazing. Yeah. If I knew there was a hotline to sit and get the dialogue that I needed, mm-hmm. or the words that I needed, the verbiage, and just to be, you know, cognizant about like my choices, and they are just choices, mm-hmm. and it is temporary.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, because unfortunately we're not taught to sit and actually ponder on the fact that, like, you know, coming out, you have to give it time for people to come in, mm-hmm. you know, like you tell them your biggest secret that's been causing you stress, like, and for all these years, and now you dump it on your family, and now they have to deal with this. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
But you have to give them time.
Yeah.
You have to give them grace. The same that you want, you've got to give it. Mm-hmm. And like now, I have such an amazing life. Like my brothers, even, like, who are married, have kids and all that, and they look at me and they're like, you've got a charmed life, man. And I'm like, yeah, no kids. Like, I joke about it, but I really do. You know, I've got a great career. I've got a great partner. I've been a legal guardian to my niece. Yeah. So my brother trusts me with his kids. Like, I'm raising one of his kids so she can go to high school and play ball. You know, that's my happy ending.
Yeah.
Like, I'm out of the church. I no longer affiliate with religion. And I'm happy. I still have that dialogue with Heavenly Father. You know, I'm like, even though I don't affiliate with the church, like, I know that I'm not doing anything wrong, yeah. that is detrimental enough to send me to hell.
Yeah.
I've got a sassy attitude, but that's about it.
That's amazing. That's just a testament to living an authentic life. Living authentically doesn't mean, you know, we're taught in the church, you know, if you leave the church, where will you go? You follow anything on ex-Mormon. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you leave the church, where will you go? What will you do? But look at Theron Olivar. He's living a right. beautiful life. Sometimes it's even much more beautiful than we could have ever imagined. You know, it's not like life is perfect yeah. and without struggle or hardship, but
right.
the fact that we can live authentically and say, this is who I am, and come to the table. And there's definitely something to be said about that.
It's a normal life. I go to work every day. I'm raising a child. Yeah.
Yeah.
Got a great career. It's a great, great car. Like, I mean,
yeah.
Tell me I'm doing something wrong.
No, you're not.
That's my normal, yeah. you know?
I love that. Before we wrap up, I did see on Facebook a little thing that you had posted about you moving back, or that you are running for tribal council. Will mm-hmm. you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah.
That's very fascinating to me.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, growing up, you're always taught, you know, you have to get off the reservation to gain an education, mm-hmm. gain experience, and then eventually come back to help, you know, your people, your tribe, right?
Yeah.
So my dad was in politics for the majority of my childhood. So I grew up in it. So I saw him like as a leader. And I've been working in grants, and we developed this a few programs that assist other tribes here that are more metropolitan, like within Maricopa County, which is like the big city, right? So urban tribes. So while I develop these programs, it's always been like, okay, I'm going to get it to where it's streamlined, and then I can take it back to help my tribe and get this program started, because why not? Like, why not go home and help your people? And so, mm-hmm. you know, like, back when I left, yes, I was shunned, but now it's, mm-hmm. I don't want to say mainstreamed, but it's to the point where it's like, everybody's like, okay, cool. That doesn't affect me. So not that I feel safe or that I ever felt unsafe going home. Like, I would go home for mm-hmm. tournaments and see people and say hi and all this stuff. But I think I just got to the age to where I'm like, okay, like, I've lived my life. I've had my quote-unquote selfish time away, and it's time to go home. It's time to go back. I will be running for tribal council, which is like, I hate to compare it to like, I mean, on the topic, Christ and his apostles, but there are, I believe there are 12 council members for all the districts within the reservation.
Okay.
So I would be one of them, and I would speak for the people. I would fight for the people. I would get in touch with resources. Like I'm an accountant for grants and contracts, right? So who knows? Like if I get the green light to go after a grant or contract and review contracts and everything, I work in compliance now, but I was like, I can still do it.
Yeah, it'll benefit your people.
Yeah. I was like, and I have all this stuff that I'm helping other people. So I'm like, well, why not just take it home? And I finally got to that point. It's like, okay, it's time to help.
That's beautiful.
And as cliche as it is, I think it's time. Like I'm older. I'm experienced. I'm social. So it's like, and I'm approachable. That's the beauty of all this stuff is like people can come right up to me and be like, hey, Theron. And it's a first name basis back home. And it's a smaller community. It's a tight knit community. And I love it. It's honestly, I just love being home. There's nothing like being home. Granted, I made a home up here, but it's like home away from home. Yeah. So that's where that comes from. So we'll see.
That's where your heart has always been. You know, I think about you leaving to find who you are. And as heartbreaking as a lot of that was, you know, leaving your family, they disowning you in a way because you joined the Mormon church, you missing huge things that happened within your family. You've reconnected with them, obviously, but just the things that you gained, even though they were tough. And now you're, like you said, you're able to go back, give back to the people, reconnect to your heart and soul. I think that's, you just took a little, you know, I don't think we ever know where we're going to end up, but it's always surprising where we do end up where we are. I'm like, oh, I didn't see this for myself when I was 18 years old and I left the church and things around me, or I, you know, left the Mormon church after joining and felt like everything was scary and falling apart, and you've built this beautiful life. And
And it's the hard thing is like speaking to a friend about that. Like I almost got married and I was talking to him and I'm like, you know, I almost got married, I almost had kids, you know, that's not fair for them if I would have still had another a secret life or anything like that. And he actually thanked me and it was like, thanks for not doing that to somebody else, because trust me, it hurts. And I was like, you know what? Okay. Like I not necessarily isolated myself, but it's like, okay, I took the bullet and I'm not a martyr. I'm not anything like that. It's just, that was the path that agreed with me. And that was the path that I chose.
Yeah.
And why not? Why would I bring somebody else into my mess?
Yeah. And a lot of people don't recognize that, unfortunately. And
it's hard to explain because there's no conversation. It's not a conversation starter because it's so sad, you know, on both ends.
Yeah. And I think, especially within Mormonism, you're taught since you're little to just put off, you know, you're a convert, but I'm sure you heard these exact same messages of, we can go back to fasting, that you put off all physical desires, right?
Yeah.
Like the bad ones, you know, you put that aside to be able to serve God. You need to overcome your physical struggles and trials in order to become more like Jesus, right?
Christ-like. Yes.
Yes, to become as Christ, because ultimately that's our goal. We go to the temple, we make these covenants. Ultimately, we go and we become like Heavenly Father and we create our own planets. It's a whole other conversation. But I wish that, and I don't foresee the church ever doing this. I think, sadly, I don't think it'll ever change, but just teaching people truly that they do have agency, and that through agency and through the atonement of Jesus Christ, that any mistakes we make or any struggles that we do have, if we are responsible for ourselves and we don't hurt anybody else, I wish they advocated for that instead of like, you need to sacrifice for yourself. You need to put off whatever you're desiring, push it to side, marry, you know, marry a man if you're a woman and you identify and you think that you're gay, or vice versa, you're a man and you marry a woman. And then 14 years later, you realize, oh, I'm actually really attracted to.
Right. Right. And,
you know, and just the devastation it causes. And instead, the church could be teaching honesty. They believe in honesty, I think, to the core of what they want to believe. But I don't know if they actually teach. Because they do ask you in the Temple Recommended interview, are you honest with your fellow men? But do they actually know what honesty means?
Right.
Because I think even being honest, regardless of religion, people say they want honesty in a relationship. My therapist and I have talked about this. People want honesty in a relationship, but they're scared of the truth, right? They're scared of the honest truths that are going to come out of someone's mouth. We want someone who's honest, but we're actually terrified of what's going to come out of someone's mouth, and we don't know how to handle it.
Right.
We have to build up, and we have to learn how to be resilient and be able to accept that. But I don't think the church necessarily teaches honesty in the way that it promotes truth.
That's the word right there. I mean, if they just taught acceptance and, you know, I don't want to say tolerance because it's not something to tolerate.
Yeah, we don't need to tolerate it.
Yeah, you shouldn't tolerate. Just accept it. Like, it is the way it is, and people are the way they are. Like, if I could choose, my biggest fear is the lifestyle going to my niece or nephew. It's hard, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is like, I live a beautiful life, but it took me a lot to get here.
Yeah.
I would not wish that on anyone. It's great once you're here to this point where you have that realization of like, I'm safe, I'm fine. But until you get there, it's awful.
Yeah, I appreciate that you're doing work with all, because you have a lot to offer. You've been through what these kids have been through.
Yeah, the loneliness, the depression, the thoughts of like, it's better that I'm not here. And I wish that there was something like that back in the day where somebody said, hey, reach out. You need resources? Yeah. Come to us. You need like a father figure to give you a hug? Come to us. You need a friend? Mm-hmm. Come to us. You want to go to a game, but you don't want to go by yourself? Come to us. Like, we will accept you, open arms, and be happy about it. What makes me happy is just knowing that there are resources now, and acceptance is being taught and being fought for. And in our own little way of like maintaining what is out there right now and who's brave enough to come out to with their true selves. Like, my hope is that one day we don't have a group, that one day it's just fine, you know? And so until the day happens, come to all. And it's great. It's a great
find
program.
A local chapter somewhere.
Yeah. Call me.
Theron, you are just.
I'm a sissy lala is what I am. I mean, that's what I need to knock off.
No, I appreciate it. I can cry at anything. And your story is just so touching. And you are just the epitome of resilience and strength. And I just see it all over your face. And I'm so thrilled to see this next chapter of your life and
same
to get to know you more, because you are just a phenomenal human being, and I adore you.
I adore you.
This was an amazing episode. Like I said, I want to have you back. We'll do an episode probably in Coloring Outside the Lines, and we'll talk about your experience in the temple, because, you know, we went through right around the same time. I went through in 2002. And so they were still doing, you know, the initiatory, the first part of the endowment process with the being.
Which I heard they stopped.
They changed it. Yeah. But, you know, because it's us. Let's be honest. Yeah, we'll definitely have a very interesting conversation. I can't wait for that one. But I appreciate you so much for taking the time out to talk to me about all the things, and that you've just lived a fascinating and beautiful life. And it's still going, and you're just,
it's,
you know,
still going. It's beautiful.
It's still going, and you're here, and I'm just so happy to know you. And thank you again for taking the time.
Thank you for having me. I love you, and I can't wait to meet you in person.
I know, in person. I'll have to come, and I want to experience Native culture and ceremonies. And I've been fascinated with it forever. So
you'll love the food.
Yes. Oh, I'm sure I will. All right. Hugs to you.
And tell Tucker hi.
I will. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening today and allowing us to be a part of your day. If you would like more information on Leaving in Color or to be a guest on our show, you can find us on Instagram at leavingincolor.pod or email us at leavingincolorpod@gmail.com. If this episode resonated with you in any way or made you think of a loved one or a friend, please tell them about it. Your support generates more abundance collectively, so please subscribe to Leaving in Color wherever you listen to podcasts. Like all beautifully crafted pieces, this podcast was co-created by the most talented humans. Our music is by the melodic master, Tucker Winters. Our lovely cover art is by the multifaceted Jen of all trades, Jen Cagle Gilmore. Leaving in Color is masterfully produced in conjunction with Particulate Media, K.O. Myers, executive producer. And I am Christina Elmer. See you next time.